Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three begins right now. 251-343-0106. Alan Mendenhall up in about 30 minutes, so stick around for that. He's with the Heritage Foundation. Let's see. News here. Clancy trial still deadlocked. Jury deliberations are still ongoing, and I think you're going to get a hung jury there. The Charlie Kirk trial, that's been green-lighted to proceed. No surprise there. A lot of court cases in our news. Like I said, when they go, in the media really try to put a hone in on these legal disputes or these court cases, the news cycle, the producers there are looking at ratings. They're looking at the ratings they get are minute by minute. Well, this segment really worked. This segment didn't work. And I think what they're finding is the intrigue seems to be with a lot of our just watching our legal system at work. What does that tell us about politics? It's funny, like, there's just not the coverage on MS Now that, you know, the other cable news channels, CNN and Fox and Newsmax, even News Nation especially, are putting into it. And it used to be Gloria Aldred, Lisa Bloom on MS Now. They were your kind of legal experts. When you start seeing a lot of Jonathan Turley on Fox, you know who I'm talking about here. When you start seeing these guys come in and weigh in on these things as a law professor or a law expert or analysis or whatever, there's something going on in the news cycle where politics just isn't getting the eyeballs. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. Part of it, I think, you know, just kind of like, people aren't maybe as engaged. And here we are on September 2nd before a November 3rd election. And it's not really moving things. Iran continues to be a problem. Oil's at, let's see, $90 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate. That broke that $90 a barrel mark here. And that's not a good place to be. Politically, I should say. The stuff Trump's trying to do, maybe that could get that price down, but we could get more into that as the show unfolds. And then something I've been spending a little bit of time on is the election outlook, and particularly here in Alabama, and how Democrats could make it a lot closer than what we've seen in the past. What our expectations are. It's not going to be another 40-point win for the Republican nominee. That's just not likely. So, but putting that out there, that's, it's going to be closer. Now, since this isn't Jeff Poor trying to rally you and say, hey, you guys need to do your civic duty and go out and vote. Yeah, you probably should vote, but this isn't that. This is just my analysis, my take on it. There's an enthusiasm gap here that we need to be aware of. So roll through some text here. As far as Chevron investing in Venezuela, the petroleum companies need to invest in modern refineries that can refine American crude. The current refineries are dated, set up to refine foreign oil, modernize American oil refining, refine American oil, and increase consumer fuel production, gas and diesel. And they made that regulatory onerous. There's a few new refineries, but all the new refineries in the world have been built in China. You know, I wish we were as passionate about new refineries as we are these data centers. Take data center out of it and put refinery to make the price of oil go down or make the price of gasoline go down. But we're not. There's the environmentalist out there. But some of our Republican policymakers, rather than taking the bait and going down the data center rabbit hole, start talking about these kinds of things that do have a tangible impact on your life. Motor man, couldn't the city, county, or state make it a requirement for data centers to put solar panels on the roofs of buildings to supplement their power usage as well as make them pay for some infrastructure cost? Require a new law? They probably could. But, like, here's the difficulty, motor man. Like, how do you define the requirement? Is it X amount of solar paneling? How do you define that expectation? What, I mean, if you're writing a law, what does the law say? Thou shalt build how many solar panels? What is the percentage we expect of you? You see where this becomes challenging. And then you try to get city, I don't know if the city or county would have the ability, but the state tried to do it. All 140 lawmakers agreeing to that determination. So therein lies the rub. That's not a bad concept. It's just government operates with a one-size-fits-all sort of approach. Michael, I like the Tubbs governor idea. Sounds great. It would be a great change from a competent meanwhile administration. But if he doesn't get action campaign, I could truly see AL2 going to Bethesda figures again. He seems to be very popular. I've had maybe one or two encounters with him. He's a very personable guy. He's going to be tough to beat. Whereas Representative Marcus does not have the same retail political abilities, I feel like. Trying to get Rep Marcus on this radio show when he was a candidate in AL1. He's running for Congress here, and he had a legitimate shot at winning it. It was hard. After a while, you're kind of like, well, why are you avoiding softball Jeff here? And the explanation was, well, he may not be capable of, maybe a little scared. High Plains Drifter, help me out, Jeff. So if you kill your kids and the jury comes back innocent, you get to walk free. If she kills them, she'll kill anyone. I don't know. If she's found innocent by reason of insanity, and she walks free, I mean, I find that outcome to be very, I would be surprised. I think this is a hung jury. I think it goes to retrial, High Plains Drifter. And I think where the prosecutor screwed up was with the charges. They should have been realistic here and known the jury pool and what they could get in court as far as conviction goes. It's our system. It may not be perfect. You're innocent till proven guilty. And in the eyes of this jury, these prosecutors have not proven her guilty. The insanity defense, the insanity plea is part of American justice. But I, like I said, just you know, my armchair quarterback perception of it is maybe they should have been more realistic with what they thought they could get as far as a conviction goes from a jury in Plymouth, Massachusetts. When you have a bunch of women wearing pink ribbons, apparently, in the jury box. Fire Dog, Doug Jones is not going to win. He could scream and cry, and you could put out signs. It won't matter. You're probably right, Fire Dog. The problem, like I said, you don't want Tommy Tuberville limping in to the governor's mansion. It needs to be decisive. And for all the reasons Andrew Sorrell laid out, what I didn't really think of, one that suggests to these big associations like, I don't know, the teachers union, who are ideologically aligned with Democrats, to start backing Democrats again and start making it more difficult for Republicans. So the discussion here isn't necessarily Doug Jones governor, but Tommy Tuberville governor by how much? Toothless Bama environmentalists are more on board with nuclear power plants today than data centers. Well, they're more on board with a lot of things that are antithetical. They'll spend more time fighting a solar farm than the aluminum plant. And that's upside down. I'm pro aluminum plant, pro solar farm to the extent that you are operating within the legal boundaries. I'm not anti any of this stuff. And like pro solar farm also to the extent that the government isn't subsidizing it. Your tax dollars aren't. But guess what the federal government's going to do? Whatever it wants. If the subsidies are there, and they're there for everyone to take advantage of, including you and I, then so be it. I wouldn't have voted for them. Yeah, but the environmental aspect is curious to me. Mike, the difference with the murderous mob is women in general are crazy. Okay. What's your home life like, Mike? 1 in 4 on medication for mental disorders. Timothy Ray Jones strangled his 5 kids to death during a schizophrenic psychosis. The jury deliberated for 2 hours and he got the death penalty. Squirrel Vereen. I wonder what kind of sponsoring AltaPoint thinks of Lindsey Clancy, the psychiatric industry popularized, is the cause of all of this. Well, I tell you, you look at the drugs or the prescription medication she was on, and yeah, I mean, that raises some questions in my eyes, in my view. Maybe it's not an AltaPoint question, but it just in general, what are we doing here? Is our healthcare system, our mental healthcare system, failing us? 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Take it on down to Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Birmingham. Montgomery. Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Coming up on tomorrow's program, April Murray Fogel, a couple of guests to be named later. I'll work on that after the conclusion of today's program. Also tonight, Josh Moon and I, the unlikely duo here. Tiger Talk Overtime, guests to be determined, if any. But we got the Tiger Talk duties tonight. And hopefully, if you're an Auburn fan, after you're done with your Tiger Talk experience, you'll stick around for Tiger Talk Overtime tonight at 7 p.m. And we'll put a big focus on sports ball and run to text line and see what we could do there. But if you, like I said, if you're an Auburn fan, please make sure you tune in for that. Let's see here. Still to come on today's program, Alan Mendenhall from the Heritage Foundation. Toothless Bammer. Lindsay is truly insane. If I had been the dad that had committed crime, he wouldn't have the support outside the court. Plus jury would have delivered a guilty verdict in minutes. It's a truly insane episode. I think, and I don't know. I mean, I've never been a mother. That postpartum depression is a real thing. It's not rational. And I think there's some women out there, particularly of the blue persuasion, who sympathize. So it was here's a legal conundrum. It seems like it's a premeditated, planned out act of insanity. It's a contradiction of the clinical definition of insanity. Oh, well, you were crazy and you were committing crazy acts, but you were acting it was very planned and very, you know, sending your husband out for medicine or whatever. not the markings of a crazy person. And yes, you can roll out all the experts. You could talk about what this would have been like if it were a male who committed the crime. Sure. But it comes down to the jury trial in our system. And in that jury pool, you know, I think these prosecutors didn't really, they were way too rosy on their prospects here. Is it worth it to the taxpayers to make an example out of her? Prosecute this again? I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to, but we're going to prosecute the same matter with the same experts with the same charges. Or do you try to lower the charges, get a plea deal, and get this woman the help she needs to keep her from being a threat to society, and we go on about our lives? Or is it this is a time for justice, and this needs to be the example set forth to keep this from ever happening again? There's like a lot of ethical questions here. But I think tactically, the prosecutor screwed up here. They overcharged probably beyond what is realistic of a jury trial in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Sam, but a great mother in person could have been your mother. He also writes, good day, Jeff. What if this woman that killed the children was your sister aunt, and you knew that she was not a good person and mother? How much is it incumbent on the people that are close to her to see the warning signs here and try to do something about it? Another interesting question. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Getting crazy. I'm getting hammered. Sitting right here at the floor of Bama. At the floor of Bama.
I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me. Coming up here shortly, we'll talk to Alan Mendenhall. He's from the Heritage Foundation, trying to connect to him as we speak. So please, I think we got him now. Alan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time for us. We do appreciate it. We've had you on from time to time, and I guess people getting familiar with you. You're a fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and I wanted to, a couple of things I want to talk about with you. I saw that you were on, I guess it was on News Nation or Newsmax. So I can't remember one or the other, and talking about this whole affordability question and really the economics of the oil prices as they pertain to us as consumers here in the United States and in Alabama. But do you see what the Trump administration is trying to do? It feels like it's kind of an offset thing, that the real fundamental problem is there, but they're not really able to tackle that expeditiously. So maybe they're just kind of looking for options as we speak.
Yeah, so it's interesting that you brought that up, because I just put the finishing touches on an op-ed, because yesterday I spoke to a reporter from The Hill, and she basically used almost none of my answers in her piece. But she was asking me, how soon do you think all these moves are going to kick in? Like, the administration's doing this with pharmaceuticals and this with Venezuela and this with, you know, XYZ, and how long do you think, you know, it'll take for this to kick in? And my answer was sort of like, you know, nobody knows. You really can't predict the economy. It's not like a dial you can turn and just say, you know, all of a sudden this is how it's going to shake out. Like, the economy is really unpredictable. Something could happen in Iran that is unexpected, or we could have an earthquake, or, you know, even with the beef prices, a hurricane or whatever. The beef prices have to do a lot with, you know, sort of agricultural and drought issues that were outside the control of any herder. And so, you know, the farmers reduced their cattle supply just because they had to keep the numbers down so that they could feed all the cows. And, you know, that's not something that any person really had control over beforehand, you know. And so my point being, the economy is an incredibly complex thing. You know, nobody can predict why one family in Kansas sitting at their dinner table chose this substitute for beef rather than another. Prices are really just signals on a free market. They're just signals that tell you what it is people are valuing. But the economy itself is so complex that all this knowledge is embedded within it, and you can't just centrally plan or direct. So my point in that piece is basically just to say, no one actually knows how long it'll take for things to kick in. But affordability is a genuine concern. You know, people have issues with the cost of housing and with, you know, mortgage rates and with the cost of higher education, tuition prices. You know, these are things that disproportionately affect, I think, young people in particular. And so they're not wrong to be concerned about them. But one point that I keep making is, you know, we also need to put these numbers into context. Like, yeah, we're at 3.4% headline inflation, and that's a lot higher than the 2% target rate that the Fed has, and it's not where we would like it to be, but it's certainly not 9.1%, which is what it was in June 2022 under Biden, when gas prices were over $5, and now they're just hovering around $4. So we've had it a lot worse, and not that long ago, and we just have short-term memories. And, you know, if you're people on the campaign trail and you're trying to attack you know, you're trying to attack the administration, you're trying to attack Republicans, whatever, of course you're going to focus on prices, because that's something that people always wish were lower. There's never a time in human history when people didn't wish prices were lower, you know, or that they had more money. It's just something that it's an easy thing to attack.
It's these outsized expectations, and you know, maybe in some ways, you know, Republicans circa 2024 are to blame, but there's never going to be going back to pre-2020. It's just, this is already out there. You can't roll that back. That's unrealistic, yeah. But those are the expectations that we kind of set, I think. And now you have to pay the price for that politically.
Yeah, it's true. Now, you know, when it comes to some of those things with young people that we're talking about, like, I feel as if probably too many young people are going to college when they don't have to. I mean, I have a lot of friends in the area where I live. I play golf with them. And they are, you know, they're basically millionaires, and they never went to college. You know, they started work when they're 18. They never had student loan debt that they had to pay off because they didn't go to college. And they went into trades like plumbing and electrical work and HVAC and roofing and construction, landscaping, all that kind of stuff that I wouldn't be able to do, you know, welding, handyman stuff. I can't do that. But a lot of them bought cheap properties when they were young, and now they rent them into college students, because I live in Auburn. So, you know, it's a big college town, and they rent these properties to college students. And because they have these skills and can fix things by themselves, they don't have to pay someone else to do something whenever a rental needs repairs. And over the years, they've built these multiple streams of income from their businesses and their rental properties and their investments, and they live well. You know, they get Auburn season tickets, they have nice boats, they take out on Lake Martin, they play golf, they enjoy this lifestyle they built. And a lot of them are so busy with work that they actually have to turn customers away because there aren't enough people in the trades to meet the demand. Like the other day, I contacted this one guy that had helped me with my tankless water heater, and I asked him, because in a, you know, previously he had done just sort of general handyman work. I said, you know, I've got this punch list of things I need to do. Can you help me with this? And he's like, no, honestly, I am so booked up in the foreseeable future, and I'm focusing mostly on just plumbing and water stuff now because I've got too much of that work. I cannot help you. I've got too much work to actually help you. And, you know, those are signs. Those are good signs to me. Those are signs of people that have noticed a failure in higher education, noticed a failure in the student loan market, noticed all these problems, and did the right thing. They were entrepreneurial, and they pursued a business that was in high demand, and they've done very well for themselves.
You know, it's interesting to talk about this, and yes, there's a higher education bubble, and my grandparents, you know, thought you would be, you know, set for life with a college diploma.
Yeah.
And some ways that's, you know, still kind of true, but, you know, so the state policymakers said, oh, no, wait a second here. We need to change course. We don't need to focus so hard on college prep. It just isn't true that, you know, a college degree is worth what it was 40, 50 years ago. It's just not. However, I think in Alabama, where we're making the mistake, that they've decided they're going to go down this workforce path. And it gets back to what you're talking about. They're trading a workforce for kind of big business, the big manufacturing plants. They're not training the guy to be the next mom and pop plumber or the next handyman. The policymakers are aware that we need a workforce, but the tweak that needs to be made is we just need guys who could do trades at a kind of a ground level, and not, you know, putting together Mercedes Benz in Vance, Alabama.
Yeah, like I see what you're saying. You know, on the one hand, you know, you don't need to probably study exactly how to weld. You'd be better served just going and learning from somebody who's welding stuff how to weld. But if you wanted to take it to the next level and say, hey, I've been welding for 5-10 years now, and I think I want to launch my own business, and, you know, I want to incorporate in the state, and, you know, I want to know what my tax implications are from that. Well, then, you know, I can see why you might want to, you know, you might need some sort of other form of education, you know, otherwise you'd have to rely on other people for that. But, you know, there isn't really a problem with having to rely on other people for that in the same hand, you know, like you've built up 5 to 10 years of savings, and then, you know, you consult a lawyer, you pay, that's what they're for, or whoever, you do what you need to do to incorporate. And, you run a business. But I can imagine you, if you went straight into plumbing at 18, you know, you probably don't need to take classes on the theory of plumbing or something, you know, like what is the metaphysics of plumbing? Like what is the epistemology of plumbing or something?
You're right about that. But I think it's this though, too. Like the state's putting investment in like just getting worker bees to some favored actors, right? You know what I mean? Like, okay, you figure it out with your water heater. Fine. You know, that's up to you. We need people to get more of these auto assembly plants or more of the defense contractors. They got like a robotics school where you could go learn a trade of how to run some of this heavy machinery that does a lot of the work. You know, that's where they're putting their focus. And I think there's an underlying economic question here, like the self-sufficient local community. You know, how are you training the next tradesmen that's going to be in demand in your community in Alabama and not for the big plant that are the big, you're training a workforce, a skilled workforce that you're going to put here to draw the next big fish, you know, that it needs to be boiled down a little bit.
Yeah. So I kind of see what you're saying. So like, let's say it's been determined by, I don't know, the legislature or policymakers of some kind that we're going to focus on workforce development or whatever. And that means we're going to throw some money at this. Well, that means, you know, any business of a particular size is going to create some workforce, blah, blah, blah program so that they can have access to that money. And then once they get that money, what they do with it is difficult to trace and track. And, you know, it's hard to say whether they've been effective, what their measurables are and all that kind of stuff. And so you get those types of things, you know, I get that, that makes sense. And, you know, I'm sure public choice economics, which is all about incentives, is probably has a lot to say on those types of programs.
Yeah, it's a matter of like the state kind of picking winners and losers. And you know, that's something that it does, and it's going to do victory laps to tell us how great these workforce development things are. But I don't think it's, because, you know, I don't think it's really looking at this from a holistic standpoint. It's just looking at it like, we got to train a workforce to recruit the big customer for Alabama Power or whatever.
Well, you don't want the businesses doing sort of what universities did when they got this administrative bloat because of the, you know, largesse they enjoyed from the student loan program. You don't want them just saying, okay, we're like, we can't take these residual profits home with us because we got them for these particular programs. So we're going to grow headcounts and we're going to add titles. And we're going to add initiatives. Like in the university, it was a DEI and compliance offices and all, you know, all those kinds of things. And then you got this administrative bloat, and that didn't really help the students. So, you know, that's an issue.
Last question, we'll get you out of here on this, the passing of Wendell Berry. He's kind of a figurehead, maybe not a lot talked about, but, you know, your thoughts on him and kind of for our audience, kind of talk about, you know, sort of a figurehead in this sort of the phase we're in now in America with maybe some of the economic populism that's underway.
Yeah, well, Wendell Berry is, you know, he's known as a kind of a Front Porch Republic guy. Front Porch Republic is a website that runs articles. But he, you know, he was an environmentalist and a farmer, and he's known for being sort of an agrarian guy that was rooted to place. He was from Kentucky, and he wrote all these different books of poetry. So he's a man of letters. You know, he wrote books of poetry, he wrote essays, and was known as a literary man. And I probably don't agree with a lot of his economics, but I agree with his sense of place, his sense of rootedness. I actually think he's sort of maybe what we would call a Jeffersonian agrarian, somebody that that understands the ties to the land and was just inherently conservative. And I do think he's right about some of the excesses of our culture that that are sort of predicated on the business that he would criticize. Like, nobody wants to see all of our personal lives industrialized. And, you know, we want to be motivated by family and community and, you know, things, goodness rather than greed. And, you know, so that type of stuff makes perfect sense to me. But I think he's somebody that everybody ought to read. He was a national treasure, and he was very old. He was 92 when he passed away. And it's a tremendous loss for our country. But if there's any gain from it, it's that maybe his works receive wider recognition and people pay more attention to him. And I think he is a great teacher for us all.
Alan, folks want to find you online, follow you and your work. How can they do so?
Yeah, well, my Twitter handle is just at Alan Mendenhall. My name is AllenMendenhall. And my website is just AllenMendenhall.com.
Alan, we appreciate your time this morning. Let's do it again soon.
Sounds good, Jeff. Thanks.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Once was a thought inside my head. Before I reached 30, I'd be dead. But somehow on and on I go. I keep on rolling with the flow. Folks said, told him on credit, Daddy just smiled. I'll never forget it. Daddy never was the Cadillac kind. He said something.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Wednesday morning. Tomorrow's program, we'll get April Marie Fogle and some guests to be named later. Jerry asked me if I'll be broadcasting from J.D. Crow's hot tub. No, we won't be doing that on tonight's program. I named Texas. She's paralyzed from the waist down. Oh, what harm could she do to society? Fire Dog, I'm sorry, but I'm going to say it again. If this was a 350-pound MAGA hat-wearing woman from Mississippi, this would have been a hung jury. In fact, it probably wouldn't get any attention from the media at all. But we are found guilty by a jury of our peers. That's our system, Fire Dog. You may be right. But Plymouth, Massachusetts is a very different place from Macomb, Mississippi. B-Dark, a college degree has ruined a whole generation. And then unnamed texture, higher education, about the only business where the customers are treated like crap. Sometimes it's the experiences vary there, but I've been on both sides of it. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey, Jeff, a variety of guests that may or may not be on the show. Cameron Smith, possibly, in the first segment. Also, you know her. We know her. We love her. Erica Thomas from 1819 News at 12:30. And Jerry Carl is going to join me in the 1 o'clock hour. I want to get his – obviously, we'll talk about the campaign, that kind of stuff. But we'll delve into what's going on with Iran. What if we're still in this war come January of 2027? Get his thoughts on that and a whole lot more coming up on Midday Mobile.
Here's a question for you, Sean, and you're a titan in the radio industry. You're a young man, and you're wanting to be in the radio business, whatever that may be. Do you tell him to go off to college, or what do you tell him to do?
Ooh, that one is probably not. I mean, they could do whichever. I would say, yeah, I'd tell them to go to college and get a degree in something else that gives them a broader, to get into radio, I would say, unless they're well-read or interested in a lot of things, go get a degree in, you know, something else and then be able to have that for a fallback for a job, but also have that expertise. You're, you know, on the radio and you say, oh, by the way, you know, I do know about whatever this is, you know, whether it's a history subject or, you know, something like that might be valuable.
Let's say it's
sports talk now.
I mean, but it's just radio in general.
If you've been sniffing jocks your whole life, hanging around the locker room, then you're fine. Just go out there and give your hot
take.
Yeah,
maybe you played high school football or whatever.
That's good.
Because
played a position or been the stats guy or something.
Because maybe it's this. Maybe you just need that hands-on training to know how to work a board or do some things around the station, you know, to kind of help out and understand how the business works. And you don't get that in college necessarily.
No, yeah, the way I got it is I worked in commercial radio while I was, you know, in college at the University of Alabama. So I learned those things there. And it was not just the board. I mean, I learned to make myself valuable to the people that signed my paycheck, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's working on equipment, doing automation, those kind of things. I learned how to make noise come out of speakers, and that's what saved me for all those decades.
Yeah, just the old template, which is, you know, template I grew up on, and you apparently did too. It's just not applicable as much anymore.
No, I mean, they probably told me to go straight to YouTube, see what they could do.
Yeah, well, why you want to be in this dying format? Here we go. But got to get out of here. We'll try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, fellas, forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.